Last week, Rav Eitan spoke about Grama. When 2 weeks ago, we spoke about Malachos, we spoke about Av and Tolda, the different categories of Malachos. I think we spoke about Darvash Shein Miskavin, although when I was driving, I was like, did we talk about Darvash Shein Miskavin? Unintended consequences? I'm not sure.
We did. We definitely touched on it.
Okay, good. Thank God. I wanted to talk tonight about Shinui. Shinui is unusual manner. So this is an important topic because it comes up all the time. And people, we don't necessarily know what the parameters are. We sometimes wonder, as you know, like, well, the fridge bulb is on. I'll just hit it with my elbow and that'll make it all better, no? And like, or, you know, the light's on in the basement, so I'll just kick it off with my foot. So using my foot is a good idea for Hilchos Muktzah purposes. We spoke about that when we learned Hilchos Muktzah, that almost all poskim agree, if you have a Muktzah problem, to move it with your body, with like your back of your elbow or your foot, not with your hands, you're safe. So if I left my cell phone on the table, I can move it off the table with my elbow. I can move it out of the way, so you're safe. But I want to talk about doing a malacha with a shinui. How does that work? You know, is it really okay? I don't remember even what I wrote in the email today. Something about turning on the light with your toe or something like that. Is that okay? And what's the story with that? And the funny thing is that we seem to get conflicting reads on this. Let me give you an example. There is a good case where something which isn't done in an unusual manner is absolutely permitted, even according to the rabbis. Because we spoke about the fact that there are Isurim Doraisa, biblical restrictions, which break down to Ovis and Toldos, and then there are Dinim Derabana, rabbinic restrictions. Very often, things that are mutter, even if they're permitted in Minatorah, but they're going to be also Midrabanan for various reasons. But let me give you an example. Let's say I take a plate, and a paper plate, and I live in the Sahara Desert. And I take an egg, and I crack it onto this paper plate in the middle of the afternoon in July.
With the omelet.
Right? What's the din? Is it mutter to do that on Shabbos?
For ritual purposes?
Yes.
So
that's one vote. Anybody else? All I did was take paper plate, crack it on the paper plate.
Are you asking if it's lechachila or is
it lechachila?
Wouldn't it cook anyway inside of the egg and then heat?
Oh, it could be. So, same example. Let's say I take the egg, I take it out of the fridge and put it in the street. Even better, I just put it on the plate. Mutter aser. The Gemara says mutter lechachila. Mutter lechachila.
Wow.
And Rashi explains. Because ain darko bakach. That's not normal. Now, this should not be misunderstood. If I, let's say I heat a frying pan in the sun, and then I cook on that frying pan, that's called toldo sachama. That's restricted, because you might confuse this frying pan with another frying pan that was heated on the fire. Midrabanan, that's not allowed. I'm talking about just cooking in the sun proper. So the din is, it's mutar lechatchila. However, that's very hard to understand. Because there is another Mishnah. The Mishnah a little bit earlier talks about if you carry something. Let's say I carry something out into the Rishos Rabbim under my arm like this. What happens if I carry like this in the Rishos Rabbim? Is this a normal way of carrying?
No.
So the Gemara says if I carry kalachar yad is the back of my hand. The phrase kalachar yad literally means, it's in the context, is if I carry like this out to the Rishus Arabim, that becomes like the catchphrase for unusual, kalachar yad. So anytime the rabbinic literature speaks about kalachar yad, it just means in an unusual manner. Okay, this is how I'm carrying, kalachar yad. Is this a violation of hotzah if I carry it out into the public domain? So the Gemara says, no, it's not. But it's also midrabanan.
Again.
What's that?
Again. What did Rabbanan say?
They say it's asur.
Asur also gava?
Yeah. Okay. So I want to understand. Why is it that the Gemara is telling me that I can cook an egg in the sun, because it's not normal, but I can't carry in an unusual way. Let's say the light switch. I can't turn on the light switch with my foot. I'm not allowed to do that. What's the difference? That's question number one. Question number two is, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because before we talk about the malachos, this helps us get just some of the basics down, wanting to understand what's the nature of doing malacha. So the next question that I have for myself is, well, wait a second. Who said that carrying something out under my arm like this, who said that's not a violation of Shabbos? Who said that's not a malacha daraisa? Why not?
What was the original reason why... Just chutzah.
Yeah.
The idea of taking from one reshut to the other reshut. What's the motivation behind creating Kodesh on Shabbat? Not creating, for that matter.
So good. So we spoke about this when we first started. Not everybody was there. I think it was at Howard's house. Good timing. Howard can give us chazara. We spoke about the fact that to demonstrate the fact that we are Avdei Hashem, that we are in service of God, we take one day, 24 hours, which means a full-time period, where we say, look, we're not going to create anything. We'll let you do the creation. We said there was one exception to that, one activity on Shabbos that's not creative, and that is Chutzah, because there's nothing creative about moving my telephone from here to there. I move it in my house, I move it to the street. So that, therefore, the Gemara, Tosfos says, therefore, Chutzah is called a Malacha Gerua. It's an inferior malacha, and every step of the way you always have to have a special verse or statement to tell you that it's prohibited. Otherwise, I wouldn't know, because it's a malacha gerua. But any malacha we're seeing, for example, the Gemara says, let's say I'm right-handed. Let's say I was left-handed. If I wrote a letter with my left hand on Shabbos, would I be in violation of an Issa Daraisa? No, because it's kilachar yad, it's unusual. Why not? What's the source of that?
Makes sense. You could say that you're putting your left hand, you've had conscious thought that it's Shabbos and that...
No, let's say I didn't have conscious thought. Let's say I had no conscious thought.
None whatsoever.
None whatsoever. None whatsoever.
To me, that doesn't make sense.
So, and I'll give you a further question. Let's say we're talking about Shinui. Dave and Howard. We're talking about Shinui, doing things in an unusual manner. Let's say I have a non-kosher food.
Yeah.
Let's say I have non-kosher food. And I boil it up like 100 degrees, 1,000 degrees, whatever, burning hot. Or I have like a glob of fat, chelev. And I sit down with imagine this was a tub full of fat, not just ordinary fat that went along with your veal chop, like a glob of fat from the kidneys. At chelev, that's an isa darais and isa karis. And I took my fork and I was just spooning it out and eating it. Is that a normal way to eat? Does any human being eat raw fat of an animal?
No.
Gemara says that's not normal. The Gemara says in Pesachim, that's not normal. So the Gemara says in Pesachim that if you eat that fat in an unusual way, or let's say the Rambam, I believe, expands this to what I mentioned earlier, you take something that's 150, 180 degrees and you pour it down your throat, you eat it, you scalded yourself. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely abnormal. Mm-hmm. So the Rambam assumes that's not an Issa Daraisa. Mm-hmm. It's not permitted, it's prohibited,
right.
But it's not an Issa Daraisa of eating the chelev. Because it's unusual, it's not normal. So we have now expanded the definition of kilachar yad of Shinui beyond the concept of Shabbos. Well, which is it? Is it a Shabbos concept or is it a Kol Torah Kula concept? Is it both? Is it either? Mm-hmm. That's question number two. What's the rationale for this? So question number one we raised was, in what scenario does a Shinui impact it all the way to make it lechatchila mutter? And when does it say no? It's just usher b'drabanan, but still... you can't do it. So, there is a sefer. I think we mentioned this once before. The sefer is called the Eglei Tal. The Eglei Tal, which I have the Xerox here, I didn't bring the sefer. The Eglei Tal was written a little over 100 years ago, probably not by 100, 115 years ago, 130 years ago, by Rav Avraham Borenstein. Rav Avraham Borenstein was known as the Sachet Shavu Rebbe. the author of the multi-volume Shilas and Tshuvas Avnei Nezer. So he was a very important Chassidish Rebbe and also a great Talmudic and Halachic scholar. He authored a volume on Hilchos Shabbos called Eglei Tal. Tal, backwards, Lamentes, 39 Malachas. He has a Yesod in this Eglei Tal that's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Every once in a while you come upon a Yesod and you just wonder, like Rav Shechter, my Rebbe, used to ask, like, what did they think before this came along? Like, did he just discover America? I don't know. But this Yesod is mamish, a knockout Yesod that explains the whole story. He says, look, there seem to be two ideas at work when it comes to Shinui. One is a universal concept of Shinui, and then there's one that's a Shabbos concept. Many explain. He quotes from some Achronim in the discussion about Shinui, who say that a Shinui has to do with Meleches Machsheves. We started at Howard's house talking about the fact that all Melachos have to be done like the Mishkan. And if it's not done like the Mishkan, it's missing the definition of creative, positive action as defined by the Mishkan. And that's the rabbis looked at to define creative activity. So that's one way of looking at Shinui. You say, look, Shinui, that's an aspect of Shabbos. That's one aspect. But then there's another aspect. And there's a totally different aspect. And that is the Shinui outside of Shabbos, like the case of the guy eating. Or, I'll give you another example. Imagine for a second, I'll illustrate this like this. Imagine this was a house. This room was one house. And it had saras. So there are two ways to become tummy with a bias that has saras. Either you have something that's in the house, or you have what's called bia l'toch habayis, entering into the house. So there's a whole discussion how much. But imagine the way this. Imagine this is the front door to the house. So if I come into the house like this, the Gemara assumes that even if I have like my hand out the door, I'm already tummy because I'm in the house that has its saras. Mm-hmm. But the Gemara has the following, the Mishnah has the following din. Let's say I came in the house like this. I walked in the house backwards, and I had a piece of my hand outside. Obviously, if I'm all in the house, so I'm telling you like the fruit platter is in the house. But let's say I enter the house backwards. So the Gemara says, I'm not tummy. Why not? Because I came in an unusual way. Different kind of a shinui. It has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. Says the Avnei Nezer, you know why? Because these two Shinois are different. The first group of Shinois in Hilchos Shabbos, they are more limited, we would say. That's what we would call a Shinoi in the Eichus HaPoel, in the way that the thing is done. So I'll tell you exactly what I mean. Here's the telephone. The telephone, I'm going to try to get this telephone from the Rishus HaYochid to the Rishus HaRabim. Now, whether the telephone goes in my hand or under my arm is just a difference in the mode of transportation, in the poel, the way that I do it. But in the item itself, is there any difference?
No.
No difference. So really, that wasn't such a big shinui. It wasn't such a big difference. Not a fundamental, essential difference. So for that, you have a very high level of sensitivity, that's Meleches Machsheves. If you take it out, even though it's just a slight difference, even though at the end of the day, my thing is in the public domain, let's say I kicked on the light switch with my foot. So at the end of the day, the lights are on. But since I kicked it on with my foot, it's a little bit different. It's not like the Mishkan. Mm-hmm. But that's only in Shabbos. But in other areas of Halacha, it's more than that. In the case of the chalev, what was different? Was it just different how I ate the chalev? No, I ate it with a fork. The item is different. The nifal. When I walk through the door, what makes me tummy? What makes me tummy is how I walk. The result is different. It's not just the mode of achieving the result is different. The actual physical result If you take a snapshot of what I'm doing, at the end of the day, it's not like the lights. At the lights, when I did it normally, I have lights on. When I did it abnormally, I have lights on. But in the case of the walking in the house, when I take a snapshot when I walk in abnormally, that doesn't look normal. I didn't end up with a normal end product. The same thing with the Chelav Chai. Says the Sfasem, it says the Avnei Nezer, this is the distinction. Now we can put two and two together. So when it comes to Shabbos, even a slight change in the mode, that lowers it from a Doraisa to a Drabanan. When it comes outside Shabbos, it has to be a change, a Shinui, in the actual Nifal, in the item itself. Okay? Make sense? Questions, comments, observations? Shabbos, non-Shabbos. A slight distinction versus a fundamental change in the object itself. Okay, so now he says Gevaldik. On Shabbos, we can now say, you can do the following. What happens if you have a slight shinui and you couple it with a huge shinui? Then what happens? When I fry an egg in the sun, what happens? So number one, I've done something abnormal by frying it in the sun. But if I ask you, how does an egg taste on a fire versus in the sun? Is it the same or is it different? Is it going to taste exactly the same? No, why? Because the method of cooking obviously affects what it's going to taste like at the end of the day. So therefore, says the Avnei Nezer, you want to know why Bishul Bechama, cooking in the sun, is mutter lechatchila? It's because it has a double shinui. It has a shinui not just in the way that you did it, but also in the end product. Exactly. He suggests, he doesn't say this explicitly, but it sounds like he would say this. If I write with my left hand, and the way that I write with my left hand is like a chicken scratch, so that's a double shinui. He doesn't say this, but this is, he makes a diuk that would sound like this.
What's the difference that it tastes different? I mean, like, there's so many different ways you can cook something. Mm-hmm. And this is one different way. That's not a double. To me, that didn't seem like a double shinoi. It just is another way of it tastes. So
it's a good kasha, but I would say like this. I think the answer, you'll tell me if this makes sense, is that in this case, the reason that it tastes different is a direct result of the fact that you did it in this abnormal way. Mm-hmm. You can say that your shinoi has left an impression in the item. That's the point. You're right. You could have. There's a difference between frying it versus baking it, but in this case, the fact that it was done abnormally left a difference. There's something unusual here, as opposed to when I kick on the lights and you come in later, you wouldn't tell. You could never know that that was done.
I see. So, if, for example, if you kicked the oven on and cooked the egg,
exactly,
that would be sort of the single shinoi.
Exactly,
but it wouldn't. Okay,
exactly, because there would be no difference in the result. So he says this with this, you can answer two bomb kashas. Bomb kashas. We're going to learn, please God, we should be well. We're going to learn the laws of tochein, grinding. So there is an unbelievable din in Hilchos Tochein. It's a very strange din, but it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. In Simen Shin Chaf Aleph Siv Zayin, please God, we'll get to this. It's a very, very bizarre din. The din is, I'm going to use my prop again. I hope this doesn't dissuade anybody from using it. You're not allowed to grind on Shabbos. That's a malacha d'oraisa. So we said before that if you do something al yidei shinui, it's not a malacha d'oraisa, but it's asur mi d'rabbanon. You're not allowed to do that. The Gemara says, and it's quoted la'alach and Shulchan Aruch, that if I take a kata de sakina, the back end of my handle, and I grind something, it's mutter lechatchila.
It changes the end product so much?
Bingo. That's a way you gave away the whole store. Exactly, because all the achronim are trying to figure out, mapitom. Mapitom, just because I did a shinui. So the Mishnah Berurah says, well, since the bottom, you're not using a grinder, you're using a plate, and you're using the back of a knife, so it's like a double shinui. But says the Egel Tal, so much more than that. Because what happens, imagine you have a grinder, you have a Cuisinart or a mortar and a pestle. So what kind of end product are you going to get? You're going to get a quality, even. Right? If you use a mortar and a pestle, you're going to get an even result because it's a professional kind of utility. If you take not the front end of the blade, not the fork side, the back side, and you try to grind, you beat down the wheat. What's going to happen? If someone, if your wife comes in, she's going to ask who did the job. Obviously, you did it because you know it's obviously not done correctly. Says the Egle Tal, that's the pshat in the Shulchan Aruch. That's why it's mutter. Because not only is the shinoi in the way that you did it, but there's also a shinoi, you can see it in the end product. We could say, he doesn't say this, I don't think, but we could say this about one more very interesting, also, kind of radical halacha. There's a very complicated halacha that we'll get to called the halacha of lush. Lush is about mixing, creating a mixture. You have two substances and you create one unified mixture. And there are a lot of complicated issues with lush, which, please God, we'll get to. Abolenu Latova. But there's one very bizarre aspect of lush. It's in the same siman in Shin Chaf Aleph, which there's a very long bir halacha. The bir halacha was like the bonus material from the Mishnah Brura, edited by the Chafetz Chaim. It wasn't written by the Chafetz Chaim, but it was edited by the Chafetz Chaim 115 years ago. So there, the bir halacha has a whole discussion about the following idea. The Gemara says that when it comes to lush, there are different kinds of shinois. This comes up. Rav Eitan just spoke last week for some of your wives who were there. They spoke about making baby food. So one of the issues that comes up, we actually spoke about this last summer in a different context when we had this series on... it was taped. It was taped. But your wife will remember because we spoke about this in the summer with the women in the context of making salad dressings.
I remember.
So there was talked about in terms of baby food. We talked about making salad and making tuna fish. So anytime you take two substances, two viscous substances, and form them into one, mm-hmm. So that could be potentially like making a dough. Lisha is the problem of making dough. So Gemara has a very strange discussion, very bizarre, that in a certain circumstance, and this is very unclear, it's a certain kind of wheat. Certain kind of wheat, toasted wheat, whatever it is, that's not really relevant for us right now. The Gemara says, if you do... if you do it al-yad, which most Mefarshim explain to be a tiny bit, a little bit at a time, and then other poskim add, let's say you do it, just shake it from one side to the other, or they suggest also another distinction, which we'll get to again when we get to lush, and I hope this is not too confusing, you do crisscross, one side, another side, one side, another side, one side, another side. Says the Be'er Halacha, he quotes some Achronim who think, that this would be permitted lechatchila, even in a thick dough, something that's thick, not thin. If it's thin, it's not going to be an issur d'oraisa. But he quotes based on a Tosfos. Again, a whole long story. That's not really what the point is. But it comes up with this unbelievable chiddush, and he has a whole different taich. The Be'er Halacha, he says a whole different explanation for how this could possibly be mutter according to those rishonim. How could it be that if you have a thick mixture, not a batter, a dough, that could potentially run into an issue of an issur d'oraisa, how could the Rishonim, how could Tosfos ever think that such a thing could be mutar lechatchila al yedei shinui? How could it be? But the answer could be, according to the Avnei Nezer, it makes very good sense, because there are different kinds of shinuis. In Achanami, if you do a malacha with just a shinui in the mode, and then that's not going to be mutter, it's going to be asa midrabanan. But in the case here, what happens? If I take a water and flour and I mix it once, this is what I do with my fork, back and forth, back and forth. Am I going to get a good mixture out of that? No. If you want to mix something, you want to knead it, you need to get into the material. You can't just go one back and one at a time. Or what if I take a little bit and I mix it up, and then I put it down. Then I put it a little bit, and you make a stack of all these little pieces. Is that going to look normal at the end? It's not going to be a normal end product. So it could be that this is the secret that the Be'er Halacha has a whole long discussion about. It could be that this is exactly the secret. When you have a double shinui, one in the mode, the other one is in the end product, that creates a heter lechatchila. That's probably what we're talking about. Make sense? Okay? Any questions, comments, or observations? Yes, Doctor.
Could you just clarify? I I'm not sure if I have a handle on it, how that that insight would work as applied to two different cases that you mentioned. One of them is kicking the light switch with your foot, which is just mode but not end product. And the other one is walking into a house that has saras backwards, where also it would seem to me that the end product to an outside observer, he's in the house, he's out of the house, would be identical.
So he explains that there, the end product in that case is the act of entering.
Okay.
Because if he was in the house, so that's the different kind of tumah, that's tumah being in the house. This is a special case that the tumah is the action. The cause of the tumah is the action.
So it's not that crossing the threshold into the house makes you tumah, because you're in the house now, it's the act of entering into the house.
Exactly, because I had one hand out of the house. Because if I didn't have my hand out of the house, then the end product would be the fact that I'm in the house with it. So that's he makes that sharp diuk that in that case the end product, so to speak, is the action of entering the house. That's a good pickup, because he makes that point. So this is an very interesting observation, and I think it has a lot of important weight and explains a lot of things. And again, it comes up with this idea that could be, I didn't see anybody, so I'm not paskin halacha l'maisa, but he has a line that why does he think that writing with your left hand on Shabbos is only putter but not mutter? Because he assumes that when the case of the Talmud is talking where the guy wrote carefully with his left hand, that it looked as though he wrote it with his right hand. But I think it comes out from the Avni Nezer, again, I'm speculating now, but it should add up, that if you write with your left hand in a way that's so unusual that it's clearly discernible, that when somebody looks at it, they know this is not normal handwriting. It's not just that it's not your handwriting, it's not normal handwriting. So that would also be mutar lechatchila. So let's say you were in a position, God forbid, b'shas adchak, you were in a hospital, it was an emergency situation. So obviously, you're going to write with your left hand. You're going to try to do a shina. Of course, I'm not talking where, you know, someone's life is in danger. I'm talking they're admitted to the hospital and they say, you know, you have to sign the papers. You have to just sign the papers. So you sign with your left hand. So it could be that if you write with your left hand and your left hand, it's not used to writing, it could be that's not such an even an issur d'rabbanan. It could even be it's mutar lechatchila to write in that very, very unusual way. Again, you have to ask a posig what they think about this cheshbon, but based on the Avni Nezer, that's the idea. Because you've compounded the two different shinas, but it's not just one plus one. It's a conceptual difference that makes it so fundamental.
Doesn't even have to be so serious then, right? The UPS guy could come on Shabbos.
So that's a great shiloh.
With your left hand.
That's a great shiloh. If the UPS guy comes, I wouldn't paskin that shiloh without really consulting someone significant to answer that shiloh, but that would be the nafka mina. It comes out of this Avnei Nezer, in theory, again, not paskin halacha l'maaseh, but in theory, it would be that if the writing with your left hand is so discernibly different as an end product, it would be mutar lechatchila.
I'm not a doctor, so there's no difference, you know? But
So that's what I wanted to point out tonight from the din of shinui, because I think it explains several different halachas. So we had malacha, Maleches Machsheves. We did Av Tolda, Maisa Amalacha, Pu'ula Samalacha, and Kavana Samalacha. That we did last time. I'll just review it very briefly, because I want to talk about, in the next 20 minutes, I want to do Gzeira Derabanan, and then on the other side, we have Chayiv, Asar, and Pater, Daraisa, and Derabanan. Those are the categories that we talked about tonight. Chayiv is Nisu Daraisa, Asar is Midrabanan, it's restricted, and that's usually pater. When the Talmud says you're not liable, pater, but aser. Midrabanan is not allowed. So if you do something aide shinui, if you carry it, kalachar yad, it's pater. You're not liable for punishment, but it's aser midrabanan, deraisa derabanan. So the only things we have left here in terms of the hakdama are these several points. We spoke about the first time maleches machsheves, that it has to be based on the way it was done in the Mishkan. And we pointed out that this has two different concepts, two conceptual components. One is the way that the act is done. In the Mishkan, they took things out with their hands, so if you take it out with your hands, that's normal. If you take it out on your arm, that's not normal. Let's say that's one. Because that's kind of the Maisa Malacha, that's where you have your Shinui. That's piece number one. Piece number two is that there was a specific purpose for the way they did things in the Mishkan. So for example, we know that there are several strains of malachos. One is called sidur de pas, how you bake bread. So what do you have to do? You do choresh, and then you do zorea, you dig, and then you plant, and then you harvest it, etc., etc. So in the Mishkan, in theory, we spoke about the fact that there was a machlokas, whether it was for the building of the Mishkan or for the ongoing mechanism of the Mishkan, not for tonight. When I dig in the Mishkan, so why am I digging? Because I want a hole. I want to be able to put something in that hole. What happens if I take out some dirt, but I don't want to make a hole? I just want some dirt. What's the story with that? I made the hole. If you ask me what I'm doing, I made the hole. But I'm doing it not because of the purpose that they had in the Mishkan, not because I want a hole, I want some dirt. What would you say?
There's a 100% chance that the hole is going to be made.
You are making a hole. I ask you what you're doing. You say, I am making a hole. What would you say?
Why do you need the dirt?
What then?
Why do you need the dirt?
Because you need to cover something in the house. Yeah.
It sounds like it would be pasher but usher.
Oh, so that's the way we paskin, like Reb Shimon. It's a machlokas between Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon, the great goyim at this table. You're saying like Reb Yehuda. He said, who cares? Now, the truth is, Reb Yehuda might be Moda and Shabbos, but that's a good question, what Reb Yehuda thinks about. Let's assume for a moment that Reb Yehuda will say in Shabbos, when it comes to what's called Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, it's Chayav. He says, I don't care that you wanted it for the dirt, you did it, it's Aser. But Reb Shimon, which is how we paskin, he says, it's Potter but Aser. Why is it Potter? What are you lacking?
Intent.
Exactly. This is what we mentioned at the bottom, the difference between the Maisa HaMalacha and the Pu'ula HaMalacha. The Maisa is there, the action is there, and the Pu'ula, but the Kavana, the intent is lacking. So many Rishonim explain, this comes from Meleches Machsheves. Meleches Machsheves has two components. It has the physical, and it has the conceptual, it has the Machshava, the Kavana, that goes into every Malacha. Okay? So that's the first thing. We mentioned way back when, at that time, that this is a distinction between an Av and a Tolda. An Av, which is done, one of the basic malachos, which is done Ein Tzricha L'Gufo, in this different purpose, is different than a Tolda. That's not for tonight. That's what we spoke about then. But there's another category. The other category is, we mentioned it at the time, you mentioned Tavar Shein Miskavein. If, let's say, I'm in my backyard, sitting outside in the backyard Shabbos afternoon, and I need to bring the bench over. Mm-hmm. Am I going to scratch the floor if I pull it?
No, no good.
And I pull the chair. So what's the din in that case? I pulled the chair, and lo and behold, it made a ditch in the ground. Is that a malacha of choresh?
No.
That's Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says, no, why not?
I don't need to go then.
Exactly. That's what we call davar she'ein miskavein. So these are two principles that are going to keep coming up in Hilchos Shabbos between Malacha She'ein Tzricha L'Gufa, an action for a different purpose, versus Davar She'ein Miskavein. Now, Halacha L'Maisa, the Psak is different between the two cases. A Davar She'ein Miskavein is not Pater Aval Aser. It's Mutter. It's absolutely Mutter.
Walk on the grass.
That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Otherwise, you can't walk on the grass, right? Why?
Because you're cutting it.
Maybe you'll cut the grass. Maybe you'll rip something out. Maybe you'll step it. Now, there is a din. It's called a psik reishi, we spoke about. That in the old days, if you wanted to really give your kid a good time, you wouldn't take them to Nickel City. You would give them a chicken head. Of course, that's the best thing around. A chicken head. A fresh one. A chicken head. It's great. Chicken head. So the Gemara says, I have a great idea. I'm going to cut off the head of the chicken for my child on Shabbos. I don't want to kill the chicken. I just want the head. The Gemara says, Psik reishi v'lo yamos. Obviously, you're going to kill the chicken if you cut off the head. So the Gemara says, if you do something, an unintended consequence that's guaranteed, that's called a davar she'eino miskavein. You're not intending, but it's a psik reishi. It definitely will happen. Let's say, for some reason, you're wearing high heels. That has other halachic issues if you're wearing high heels. Let's say you're wearing high heels. There was just a rainstorm, and you're going to walk on the grass, and one of those mamish, like 3-inch spikes that can that can kill somebody, and you're going to walk on the soft grass. So that's called a psik reshe. It's called a psik reshe. You know that's going to happen. So let's leave psik reshe on the side for a second. We'll get back to it in a minute. What's the difference? How do you know whether something is ain tzrich legufa and is rabbinically prohibited versus whether it's going to be permitted, like walking on the grass? How do you know? How do you know whether it's aser derabanan or mutar lechatchila?
You just know when you grab it, when you throw it, going to make a hole. So when you walk with it, you just know.
But my question is like this: what's the difference between the case of the person who dug the hole for the dirt, and when I walk on the grass? What's the difference?
When it's such a common activity.
Okay, it's common. But let's say you're a farmer; it's very common to dig holes and collect dirt. Let's say you're a dirt collector; you do that every day. I don't know. Is it the commonplace nature of it?
You said it.
What?
You have to be a farmer in order for that to be
okay.
Natural.
Okay, so I can see that. That's one component. But maybe there's something more intrinsic in the distinction between the cases. Howard, what were you going to say?
Well, I'm thinking more of the fact that if you want to get anywhere, you're going to have to walk. So it's entirely possible that to get to, whether it's the shul or to something, walking itself is not... is allowed on Shabbos. It's the issue of the fact that you might not intendingly put the hole in the grass,
as opposed to the digging,
which probably has absolutely zero connection to anything that you might.
Well, let's even say it further. I think Howard's picking up on a key distinction here. What's the activity that I'm doing? That's the key question. Is it a pu'ula hamuteres? A permitted activity? Just it has an unintended consequence on the side? Or is it a forbidden activity for a different purpose, for a different function? That's exactly what you're getting at. Walking. Is walking usher on Shabbos? It's not usher to walk on Shabbos. Now, you're right. Sometimes walking will pose a problem on Shabbos, and sometimes walking will be usher. Because if I'm walking with boots that have spikes in them, and I'm walking on soft earth when it just rained... So it's a psik resha, so that might be usser. But in the case of the digging, what's digging? That's a pu'ulo hasura. That's a malacha. Now, I'm going to tell you, ask me, you're digging on Shabbos. I say, no, I just want the earth. But if you ask me what I'm doing and I tell you I'm digging, so that's usser me d'rabbanan. That's the way to know. If you are doing a pu'ulo hasura, then you know me d'rabbanan, you're in a bad place. Because if you... acknowledge that you're doing a malacha, you're in bad shape. Whereas if I'm pulling the bench, you ask me what I'm doing, I'm not doing a malacha of choresh. I'm not digging a hole. I'm pulling a bench. It happens to be that ta 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 ta.
Does that get into the difference between a shinoi and a light switch and a refrigerator door or something like that?
Yes. So Eitan spoke about this a little bit last week in terms of refrigerator doors, but yes, this is where a refrigerator door will come into the following situation. When I ask you what I'm doing...
It's guaranteed, right?
Oh, but that's it. It's a psik reshe. It's a psik reshe. So here's the question, though. What happens... Let's say I left something... in the car, and it's sunny outside. And what's going to happen when I open the car door? The light's going to go on. So there's an interesting shiloh. What's the story with that? So the Gemara has a distinction between a psik reshe denichale that you're interested in and a psik reshe delo nichale that you're not interested in. What's the status of a psik reshe delo nichale? So now, one could claim, by the way, that even the light going on in the daylight hours, you still want it because you like the fact that when the door opens, the light goes on.
You know that we'll...
Exactly. And therefore, you know, when it's 12 o'clock at night and I need the light, so that's a good question whether or not, in fact, you can determine that the light going on in the car during the daytime is nichale interested in it or not interested in it. So we've now added two levels, but I want to flesh out further just to make sure. We had Dover Shein and Miskavein. When I do something that's permitted and the unintended consequence is something that's a problem. Then we've added, what happens if the unintended consequence is guaranteed, psik reshe? We said, well, what kind of guaranteed consequence is it? Is it something that you're interested in or not interested in? If it's something you're interested in, so obviously you're sunk. What if you're not interested in it? Let's say it's a darvash and a miskavin that you're not interested in. So, There are two different opinions on this. There's the Aruch, which we mentioned last time. And what was his name again?
Natan ben Yechiel.
That's right. Rav Natan ben Yechiel from Italy. So he suggests that it's mutar lechatchila. Tosfos says that it's asur midrabanan. We assume that it's asur midrabanan. So therefore, even if it's something that you're not interested in, if it's a davar she'eino miskaven, if it's a psik reishe, so then it's a problem. We say that it's asur midrabanan. Why? Because there are two ways to see, and this is, it's already 9:45 at night, so it's already late to hold kaf for a whole chakira. Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman suggests that they're arguing about the fundamental nature of when you do an unintended consequence and you know something is going to happen. What does it mean? Does it mean that now this pulling my chair is called digging? It's as if I have intention to dig. Or do we say no? It's just that technically we view it as you did the action, but not, it's not wholeheartedly, it's not ki'ilu you are mitkaven. It's not ki'ilu his kavanta. So that distinction, this is the machlokes between Tosfos and the Aruch. The Aruch says, it's about my mind. Well, if my mind says I'm not interested, so how can you force me? If it's a davar she'eino miskaven, when it's lo nichale, I don't care if it goes on, then it's mutter. Tosfos says no. It becomes part and parcel of the act. When I open the refrigerator door, so then, by definition, that is not just the act of opening the door now. It's the act of turning on the light bulb. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's a problem. Because if you ask me, what am I doing? I'll tell you I'm opening the fridge door. But I will have to tell you, in truth, I'm also turning on the light. Because I know the light's going to go on. Even though in this particular circumstance, I don't care. But Tosfos says, midrabanan, it's a no-go. And therefore, it's similar almost to the malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. It's like the guy digging the hole. Because just like when you ask the guy, what's he doing? He says, I'm digging. That's a no-go. So when I ask you, what are you doing? You say, I'm going to turn on the light bulb. It's a no-go.
Does it matter if you're actively thinking about it versus not? Because when most of us open the refrigerator, you don't think about the light going on.
So that's
but then if you said, if I open it, will it go on? You'll go, yes, I do know that it will go on if I open it. But I wasn't thinking about it. I had absolutely no kavana to turn on the light.
But isn't this goes back to what we talked about last week.
We get to understand.
Which was that if we know that the light's going to go on, you know that it's going to go on. But the other part of opening the refrigerator is that it might let in enough air that it'll turn the compressor on. Which is, we don't know that that's going to do, and that's definitely something that's where we talked about this last week with the difference between the two pieces of it, that even though at some point we know the compressor's going to go on, we don't know that opening the door, even though we know that some air is going to come out, there was a big difference between the two pieces.
So I think this is an important distinction. I want to deal with this first and then that. This point is, what you're pointing out is exactly what the Aruch's claim is. The Aruch's claim is, it depends on what my mind is. If I'm not paying attention to that, how can you attribute that to me? But Tosfos says it doesn't depend on your mind. It's defined objectively, even if you're not thinking about it. So since we paskin like Tosfos, we say, oh, it's defined objectively on the light. However, what Howard is pointing out is, what's the difference between the light and the compressor? The light is a psik reishe. It's a guarantee. I open the door, the light goes on. Bingo. But the compressor, that's not a psik reishe. It's maybe an issue of grumma that maybe at some later time, if I let in a little bit of cold air or a lot of cold air, at some point it's going to raise the temperature and lower the thing, and the balloon is going to expand, and da 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 da, and it's going to cause a kick on of the compressor. That's a different story. That's exactly why it's not called psik reishe, because when I open the door, it's not going to kick on. That might be a difference. For example, using water fountains. You have to know the mechanics of water fountains, but there might be a difference. If you use a water fountain and you keep the water going, let's say one of these big water pitchers, again, I'm not passing halacha l'maaseh, but let's say you have one of these water things that the water goes into the container and it cools off. So if you open the spigot, you take out a little bit of water, is the cooling system going to kick on when you take out a little bit of water? It may, but it may not. And I ask you, what are you doing? I ask you, what are you doing? What do you tell me? I'm drinking. Exactly. I'm getting some water. So this goes back to Howard's distinction. That's called a davar she'eino miskaven. It may or may not. But, exactly what you were pointing out right now, let's say I empty the whole tank I empty the whole tank. I sit there for 5 minutes, I empty the whole tank. So now, what's going to happen? That's a psik reishi. So even though you ask me what I'm doing and I say, I'm getting water, but since by definition it's going to kick on right now, right away, while I'm sitting here emptying the spigot, that's going to be the problem. That's going to be the problem. So this distinction between is it going to happen or not is the critical distinction of whether or not it's mutter or not. When I walk on the grass, am I guaranteed going to be ripping up grass? No, I'm not. So memela it's mutter, I'm walking on the grass.
What do they say is the origin for their thought? I mean, if we're going to go back to the idea that the lamatet ab malachot, right, we should not be creating, and right. Those malachot come from the Mishkan.
Right.
And so, you know, Tosfot would say, no, we've deemed those activities in the Mishkan to be inherently creative, so we have to be very careful about those specific activities as opposed to the idea of creating, which maybe sounds like the Aruch is more of like a mindset not to create.
So I would say that that's true within the context of what we're talking about, a Darvasha in a Miskavin.
Right.
Because obviously if you're talking about a real bona fide malacha, let's say actually making a fire.
Right.
So everybody agrees that, you know, you have the two components, you have the thought and then the action. Here the question is, because when you ask me what I'm doing, I tell you I'm dragging a bench, that's exactly when they raise this question. Well, how are we defining this psik reishi? Yeah.
You're using, in terms of emptying the whole water tank. So let's say you're going to go for a 5 mile walk through a grass field. So if you said, are you going to definitely rip up one blade of grass? For sure, in 5 miles, I'm going to rip up one blade of grass. So do you break it down step by step? Mm. Or do you view the whole...
I was thinking the same question, actually.
It's a good question. Mistama, I think, I have an analogy that I would use to... I'm speaking out of turn now, because I haven't looked this up, but I would guess, I would think, that you look at every step that you take. I'll give you an analogy, mm-hmm. which is a very hotly debated analogy, but checking lettuce for bugs, checking vegetables for bugs. So there's a whole debate about how to check vegetables for bugs, how many bugs are allowed according to American law, and we're not allowed to eat any bugs according to Jewish law, but depends on the probability. How much probability? So how do you figure out probability of what? Probability in a farm? How many bugs are there in a broccoli farm? Mm-hmm. Does that mean all the broccoli in the farm? Or is it how many they sell in the supermarket, or is it in a bag? So Rav Schechter, he likes to say that it depends on your sitting. Your plate in front of you. What's the likelihood there are going to be bugs in this? So one could envision that would be the same thing when it comes to walking on Shabbos. I don't have to look at, you know, my whole 30-minute walk. I have to think about right now. Am I allowed to take this step right now? The answer is yes. The likelihood is, you know, and then...
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. And then at the end of the day, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But every time I'm about to do something, I'm going to think to myself, well, what's this? That's just by rough analogy. That would be my guess. Because we didn't find in Shulchan Aruch that says you're not allowed to take a 5-mile walk. It says you're allowed to walk. Because
the water cooler, that's just one act of emptying.
That would be my suggestion. That when you empty the water cooler, it's not just one cup and then another cup and another cup. You take 5 cups. At some point, the compressor is going to kick on in the mechanism. But if you empty out the whole thing in one shot, it would seem to me that that would be like a psik reishi. You're immediately going to knowingly kick it on. Yeah.
This is a hypothetical type of question here. But for example, if I saw a bug on the ground on Shabbos, can I step on it on Shabbos and kill the bug?
No.
No. Okay.
Right.
So let's just say this is craziness here, right? But let's just say some scientist decided to do a study and proved that every time you take a step outside, you kill a little bug. Okay? Because there's so many bugs, there's millions and billions of bugs in this world, and you're always killing bugs. There's so little, but you're killing them. If we found that out, we can no longer walk outside because now we have that knowledge scientifically. You know, like the compressor thing. I mean, theoretically, we can always find the answers to these questions. Should we search for the answers to these questions, or should we better kind of don't ask, don't tell kind of thing? Like,
no, right? So it's a good question.
Because all these kinds of things are discoverable. And the blade of grass, I was thinking the same thing, because if someone theoretically took a 100-yard walk down the grass, and someone can then look and see how many blades got covered, it goes, oh, you're breaking grass every single time. Then you say we can't walk outside of Shabbos.
It's a fantastic Shaila. I think there's actually Gemara that relates to that Shaila, because the Gemara does talk about if you killed a bug just lefi tumo, just walking. Just walking like that.
Right, right.
The Gemara says no problem.
Right.
See, you're right. If we could prove that you were killing a bug every step, then they would say, Inachanami, you can't walk and kill a bug every step. But the Gemara raises that exact point, and I think the Lashon is Lefi Tumo. The person's just walking, and he stepped on a bug. Well, if I ask you what you're doing, you tell me you're walking, right? And is there every time you take a step? Again, because it's a separate question, but the halacha doesn't recognize anything that's not, from, in general, halacha is a very long discussion, literally on regalachas. I only have one foot on the floor. The halacha doesn't recognize anything that's microscopic in general. So I don't see bugs on the floor all the time. So therefore, the halacha, the Gemara raises exactly your shaila and says, if you go out of your way to kill the animals, the Gemara has a whole discussion. If it's a dangerous snake, if it's not a dangerous snake, but the Gemara says, if you're just walking, I believe it's a Gemara in Shmona Shratzim. I think it's the 14th paragraph of Shabbos. The Gemara says, you're walking in Fituma, that's okay. That's okay, you're just walking. It's exactly this point. And you don't have to worry that, you know, maybe you killed. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. It's a psikresh. It's not a psikresh. It's davar she'ena miskav, and therefore it's mutar lechatchila.
It's supposed to the grass. The way you're walking with grass, you're supposed to cut it. It's supposed to, but it's okay.
What do you mean?
The grass. Like, it's the same issue, like you're killing bug. If you're walking in the grass, you can cut the grass, and it's okay that you cut the grass. You didn't plan to do it.
Right, but again, that's only because it's not guaranteed that every time you take a step, you will cut the grass.
Okay. But if you cut it, it's okay.
Exactly.
But if it were guaranteed, that would be a problem.
Yeah, it would be right. Become a psikreshin. Right. Exactly. And that's what the Gemara always oscillates between, trying to figure out, is it a davar she'ena miskavein, or is it a psikreshin? Most of the case of psikreshin, you got to be able, it's got to be clear and present. You cut off the head of the chicken will die. You know, the Gemara has the same concept. The child, let's say you have a child, 8-year-old child, the baby has a spot of tzaras on his orla. So that's a psik reshi. If you cut off the orla, you're going to cut off the tzaras. But walking on the grass, that's not a psik reshi. Therefore, it's going to be mutter. Okay? There's more to say about this story with the davar she'ena miskavein. There are cases where even if it's a psik reshi, the lo nichale, which in general it's also midrabanan, in certain cases it's even mutter lechatchila, but it's beyond the scope of it. It comes up in, let's say, when you're walking on the street and the light turns on from some guy's driveway. So that's a whole different discussion, because it's a davar she'ena miskavein with a psik reshi, but it's lo nichale, and it's also not here, it's over there. So there's a whole discussion about putting together the psik reshi over here and over there. There's a whole other discussion. If we can avoid walking in next to that guy's driveway, it's also a better thing to do. But there's a lot more to say. We're not going to take too much time beyond this, just to mention that the Gzeiras and Malachas Midrabanan, we should be aware of the fact that there are different strata of rabbinic prohibitions. And just because one thing is permitted doesn't mean that another kind is going to be permitted. And just because one is prohibited doesn't mean another is going to be prohibited. There are a lot of different categories. Just like we saw, there's the concept of Muktza. It's different than the concept of Shinui, which is different than the concept of Kamalis, which is what we have when you have a public domain without an Eruv, usually. So there are a lot of different kinds. It's just to be sensitive to the fact that there's Daraisa, there's Darabanan, and even within that, there are all kinds of different breakdowns. Okay? Shkoyach Gadol. Any takers for next week? You can check.